Go ahead.
All right. We'll call to order the Wednesday, October 5th, 2022, Town of Curie Beach Planning and Zoning Commission. First item on, well, I actually probably the very first thing is to note that that Kathleen Zielinski has resigned from the commission, and that automatically brings in our alternate member, Brian Ashbridge, who is sitting up here and can vote. And the reason I mentioned that is because we will have a vote on the next agenda item. So, welcome. All right. First item on the agenda is adoption of the agenda. Is there a motion to adopt the agenda?
So move.
Second.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Next item is adoption of the minutes from September 7th, 2022. I'm going to just take a second and look at the minutes and see if there's any recommended changes.
I move we adopt the minutes as presented, as written.
Second.
Okay, it's moved and seconded. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Next item is public comments. Seeing nobody in the audience, is there anybody online?
You have one person on the phone.
Okay. If the person on the phone wants to make a comment, it's what, star?
Six.
Star six. Okay. Hearing nothing, we will close public comments. Next agenda item is old business. This is the continued discussion of the green sustainability planning and zoning elements. I volunteered to do this. I would recommend that we just table or postpone discussion of this item because we have other things we need to get to. But I did go do a little bit of research during the past month based upon the recommendation of Mr. Eldridge, who wasn't quite sure what we were talking about with green and sustainability related to planning and zoning. And I was actually surprised to find a lot of stuff out there. Most of it is really directed towards large cities, talking about urban redesign and all that sort of thing. So what I did very quickly, and we have it in the packet here, but again, I'm not sure if we need to discuss it, is just put together what I found was kind of more relevant to a town like Curie Beach that we may want to consider talking about sometime into the future. And I want to thank folks for putting this in kind of the package here so we can look at it. One was actually, I think, an APA document put together back in 2016 on sustainability within planning and zoning for the American Planning Association. So, you know, again, a lot of the stuff in here really is not really relevant to Curie Beach for a couple of reasons. One, the size, and the second is that we're pretty well built out. So a lot of this stuff has to do with, you know, renovating communities and all that sort of thing. And we're not right there. But, you know, there are a number of things that we may want to consider at some time in the future. So I just wanted to bring that up. We can talk about it or we can table this to our next meeting.
Well, I'd just like to mention, too, Greg, I Googled it also. There is a lot.
That's surprising.
There's also a lot of stuff in the construction area for, you know, going forward. So I just suggest other people have, if you have some time, take a look. Because if something hits your, you know, hits a nerve with you, you may want to champion that as an idea.
Yeah, I think that's a key thing. And I think in one of my emails here, I picked out a couple points that I thought were somewhat relevant. I don't really see it right now, but there are about five or six things that I thought might be relevant when I was looking at all the stuff that we may want to consider. So, again, I would recommend just tabling this item right now because we have other things we need to get to tonight.
Okay. Make a motion to table.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. New business, discussion of town ordinances to be reviewed, recommending by Building Inspector Batson. So I believe this is yours, Sean.
I sent this to you guys last month for you to review, and just some suggestions that I've come up with and things that I've struggled with over the years. If you can look at them, I would appreciate it. If not, I'll keep on doing what I'm doing.
So what is the intent here? That we review these and then we say incorporate them, or we discuss them at a further meeting, or... Because I did review them.
I'm still trying to find it, sorry, because I read it online today. John, do you want us to go through this right now? I mean, be identified and we can actually go through them if you want.
That's up to you, like I said, some of the things I've struggled with over the years.
Are any of these text amendments? I mean, they're in section, chapter 15, so...
The majority of them will be text amendments.
So we'll have to have a public hearing, actually, for all these.
No.
No?
Text amendments throughout, either by adding... If you leave it alone, fine. Whatever you do, they get rid of it. Yeah, it'll be a text amendment. And if it's a chapter 15, you'll review and comment like you're going to do tonight and adopt a consistency statement. But no public hearing. If it's not chapter 15, you're not obligated under the code to review it, but it seems logical and reasonable to go ahead and review it as part of the steps.
24.
So you're saying if no changes to these ordinances, you're saying if they decide to change these ordinances in chapter 15, some of them won't require a public hearing?
No, but council will have to have a public hearing on them. Oh, yeah.
Not PGC.
No.
Very much so.
Just one real quick question. If there are a number of recommendations here in chapter 15, can they all be, if we were to go through all of these tonight, could they all be handled in a single public hearing by council?
I don't see why not.
Okay. Some of these look pretty trivial to me. If we wanted to go through them.
That's a good one.
Well, some of them, I think we need an explanation from the building inspector. And like he talks about the needs to delete or clarify, and if clarify means put a couple more words in.
John, why don't you lead us through these and so we can...
I think it'd be good to separate the current ordinances from the things that I'm asking for. A definition for a kitchen and what constitutes a kitchen. We don't have anything in our ordinance about that right now, really. That's me just interpreting what we do have, and it would be nice to have something in there to clarify and point to and say, this is what a kitchen is. And where that comes from is typically if someone's trying to put in two kitchens, that means they've got two units.
Right.
A lot of people like to close in the downstairs of their house and call it a mother-in-law suite and then rent it out for Airbnb. And some of our zoning doesn't allow that at all.
Mm-hmm.
Some does, and if you want to put in a full kitchen, that means you need to put in the fire separation that's required also, since you're basically making a duplex. And so that would make my job a lot easier, that's why I put that there.
John, you don't have any kind of recommendation on what you think a kitchen is?
The way I interpret it is, if you want to put in a wet bar, it's no problem. If you want to put in a stove range top, that would constitute a full kitchen. The stipulations would apply.
Okay. Chairman, can I make a suggestion?
Sure.
These are here for discussion tonight, and eventually they'll be drafted into text amendments, and so... We could develop a game plan by walking through them tonight, which ones ought to be, which ones ought to be left alone, and come back next month with some text amendments for you all to review and comment on.
Yeah, I think that'd be a good idea. So if we can just bring up these different sections and kind of walk through it in the order that you have it here, I think it'd be very useful.
Okay.
So is there a consensus for John to draft a proposed definition for kitchen?
Yes.
Yes. What is your idea for kitchen? Because I recognize the issue that you're talking about, you know, that beach communities, West Coast and East Coast, are struggling with that federal law that allows a mother-in-law house or a granny house or something like that. And from my understanding, under the federal law, which has been incorporated now in a lot of state laws, is that you can't have a kitchen in those, because then they just become second units. But what people will do is they'll put, you know, hot plates on it, and, you know, I mean, they'll make it pretty livable as a kitchen without it being actually technically a kitchen. So what are we trying to do here with our definition of a kitchen?
Well,
keep it from being rented as an Airbnb second unit, basically?
I wouldn't say go so far as to say that. I would say trying to keep the integrity of our ordinances intact and permitted uses, and also applying the building code as we should properly apply it,
okay,
based on what that use is. And so, you know, a definition of a unit, I'm paraphrasing here, basically cooking and cleaning facilities and in addition to sleeping facilities. And so, you know, my definition of a cooking facility would be a built-in range stovetop.
Okay.
Not a plug-in hot plate.
All right. Okay.
So I'll be happy to draft some sort of definition.
Yeah. Okay. That sounds good. Now, all of these, they don't all have to do with kitchen, do they?
No.
I mean, there's different things here, too, so we can...
There's a lot of different
things. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. So, 15, 14 need to just delete. Why is that?
Well, before we get on
okay,
kitchen, I just want to mention, I also have comments. So if we're going to go through and do all the most of these changes to 15, I have also a list I'm going to submit. Because, for instance, you talk about kitchen in the definitions. One of my comments is it doesn't define bedroom in the definitions either. But yet back in Article 1536.120, it states a bedroom is defined as any room. Sounds like a definition to me. It should be in the definitions, not in the words. So I have a bunch of editorials like that should also be incorporated, I believe. So I'll put them together in a lengthy list, so maybe we could do this all at once.
Yeah, no, I think it's a good idea. And by the way, I think I've been on this commission for 14 years, and what we're doing constantly is refining a document that was written, about 35 years ago or something like that? And so we've been changing definitions extensively and these sort of things. So I think it's a great idea to do that and go back and look at these things. I don't think it's on our agenda, is it? No, we had also talked about the uses in the different zoning thing. I don't think that appeared on this agenda, too. Do you want us to kind of look at that at the same time, since we're looking at a lot of trying to improve this?
So I mentioned it in the bottom of that document that I gave to you guys.
Right.
I think it'd be a great exercise for you guys to review the recent land use plan and the surveys that came out for what people want to see in our town, and then review the permitted uses in different zoning. And I think there's a lot of room for improvement or deletions in our permitted uses based off of that questionnaire. That's a good way to look at what everybody thinks and what they're looking for in our town.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of uses in some of our districts.
Yeah, in fact, some of the districts are...
For a couple of reasons, but mainly because there isn't any land available for them.
Right. Now, we certainly have a lot of uses that almost are considered business uses within some of the residential areas.
Yes.
I mean, there's no question about it. What I would suggest then is that we maybe start with John's recommendations here, and then we kind of write up our own perspective on some of these issues. Because looking at the uses in each one of the residential areas is, you know, it's right there. You have to look at each one of the residential things, and it describes the uses that are right there. But then you also have some ideas about definitions and so forth. So maybe we should all kind of look at this issue and come in prepared to talk about it next month. Is that?
I'll go back through my document and give you my reasons or justification for what I'm asking for each one of these line items.
Okay.
I'll have that in to you probably by next week. That way you can check that out while you're doing your interview.
Okay. Plus the definition of kitchen.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'll get my list. I'll get my list out to everybody too, so it's all one effort.
Would it be helpful to have the actual code provisions since you don't have an iPad?
Well, they're in the
They have the what?
They're in the code book.
So they can look at it.
Yeah, we all have to bring our code book next time.
I'll provide you with a larger, more complex document.
Okay.
Yeah. Includes the code session.
This is
okay. How about that?
That'd be good.
All right, good. I think it's an excellent idea. So we'll put this on the agenda for next month as a discussion of suggested changes to Chapter 15, Chapter 11, as well as uses related to the different zoning areas, as well as any other definitions or points that any council member wants to make here. Is that okay? All right.
Sounds good.
Do we need a vote to do that, or just do it?
Put it on for discussion again.
All right. Okay. Next item, which is proposed text amendment to regarding the roof pitch. Says me, but I didn't put that on there.
So, do you want to say that, attorney? Or do you want me to handle it? I'm sure you're going to comment on it. It was brought to our attention that this is one of the code excerpts that we kind of missed when we went through our 160D renovation of ordinances. And long story short, the 160D language simply says that we're not supposed to dictate any design elements for one and two family dwellings. And this was brought to our attention by a structural engineer that was working on the design for a flat roof house. I brought it to town council's attention, and they basically said put it on you guys' agenda, and that was the consensus of town council that it should be deleted. And that's about as short as I can make that.
The prohibition on design elements comes from 160D-702. And we are planning and zoning in council are very much aware of that statutory mandate. In essence, that's why we went with the preservation district process, because of the statutory prohibition on design elements on one and two family residential dwellings. Roof pitch never entered into our discussion. So the question is whether roof pitch is a design element, and the statute defines it design elements rather vaguely and broadly with respect to roofs. It talks about a design element being the style and materials of the roof. A pitched roof is a gabled roof, and the argument can certainly be made pretty strongly that that's, we have a design element in our code that we shouldn't have. John's right, we brought it up to council, and the consensus, the instruction was to go ahead and delete it, since the argument can be made that it's a prohibited regulation.
Is there a safety issue related to roof pitch, or is it just purely a design element?
Council discussed, there are various, you can research roof styles and come up with a list of advantages and disadvantages. And these were all brought to council's attention and we discussed them. But at the end of the day, it seemed reasonable to assume that that code provision could be construed as a prohibited design element. And you need to think of the consequences of that. If a structural engineer is complaining to us that that's a design element and prohibited by statute, well, there's some risk management going on there with respect respect to deleting it.
Interesting. Okay. I struggle with roof pitch as being a design element, I guess, but... Now, just very quickly, in a historic district, however, we could look at roof pitch because it would be an issue of consistency.
That's correct. If you look at your, let me see something just so you can get a better understanding of what we're talking about. If you can, they have got hard copies. If you open up your consistency statement for item number 2 is what the top left-hand corner says on page 1. You go to the last page, you'll see the subject statute, 160D-702. And we're familiar, like I said before, shipping containers, other things, the historic district, we're familiar with subsection B, prohibiting design elements for 1 and 2 family residential dwellings. The problem shows up in the third paragraph under B, starting with, for the purposes of this subsection, building design elements means, and then on the line directly below that, style or materials of roof structures. That's what I meant about the language being broad, such that the requirement for a pitched roof could, it is reasonable to assume that that could be viewed by a court as a prohibited design element.
You know, given that we live in a hurricane area, is there any advantage to pitched roofs versus flat roofs in a hurricane area?
I mean, that very concept was expressed to council as an alternative basis for what they wanted to do with respect to this issue, and again, having discussed it with council, the consent, and your liaison is here, he may want to add some comments, but the consensus was still to delete it.
Then I have to ask us a more fundamental question. If that was a consensus of council, why are we looking at it?
Because it's a Chapter 15 text amendment. You're, by statute and code, you're required to review and recommend and adopt a consistency statement.
If you're looking to write up something on flat roofs, do parapets enter into it? And will that have to be changed also?
Well, this ordinance only applies to residential structures, so parapets usually only come into play on commercial style buildings.
Because I can imagine somebody living in a flat roof house and they've got beach chairs and all that kind of stuff up on the roof.
Well, once again, a roof height comes into play with that. You can put your beach chairs up there, but you're supposed to have handrails going all the way around them. The handrails cannot exceed the roof height either, or the height limit either.
If I can just weigh in on this briefly. Council raised the issue of hurricanes and weather and structure. The reason I think we wanted your input on that is, can you come up with, is anyone on the commission versed enough, is there a structural reason to ban flat roofs on residential? Now, what we know is a well-engineered home can be designed with a flat roof to withstand hurricanes. Obviously, slope roofs can handle it better, but I think an engineer, and our consensus was that a well-designed home could be structurally secure in the hurricanes that we get here. But open to the commission to see if there's any other logical reason why it would not be a design element, but would be a structural consideration.
Well, flat roofs would have to be designed to either be sloped or drainage, proper drainage by code, so the water weight would not be a problem there. I think that's in the building codes regardless. So I don't think, if you're following the building code for a flat roof, I don't think there's anything there that would prohibit it in this part of, North Carolina. So it basically becomes a design.
And most of them are sloped.
Yep. Well, they're supposed to be. Yeah.
Now, for a snow area, that's different.
I don't think this even enters into a snow load. But the snow loads are, you have an area that the roofs are more pitched.
Yeah.
They do have limits on pitched roofs there. I can't think of anything in my experience would prohibit it.
Okay, well, we got two issues here. Is there any further discussion of this? No. One is to make a recommendation, and then we also have to have a vote on the consistency statement.
And regarding the latter, I'd ask you to read the three paragraphs. This consistency statement was drafted assuming the recommendation would be to delete the provision. So if you come up with a different decision, we'll have to do a different consistency statement. If the recommendation is to delete it, then I'd ask you to look at those three paragraphs in the middle, because those are your findings that support the statement.
Okay, let's first of all have a motion regarding the recommendation to council. This is a recommendation for council then. And the motion would be to delete section 15.36.140 roof pitch from the code. Is there a motion for that?
I'll make a motion.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
And I'll say no. I just don't think that's a design element. But, okay, so it passes 4-1. Next would be the consistency statement. And so based upon the attorney's recommendation, we need to read the consistency statement to make sure that it fits into what we're trying to say and or make changes. Are there any recommended changes to the consistency statement?
Not that I can see.
Okay. Somebody want to make a motion to adopt the consistency statement as presented?
Everybody read it?
Yep.
I make a motion to adopt a consistency statement.
Is there a second?
I will second.
Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
And I'll abstain from that. Okay. All right. Next item. This is the 6.3 proposed text amendment application to 15.36.070, location of accessory buildings on residential lots. Control of yards and setbacks, and hopefully everybody has read the memo from the building inspector regarding how this came about and so forth. But let's go ahead and hear the presentation.
Board members, so this is a text amendment application for 153670 and 153610, submitted by the property owner at 108 Myrtle Avenue. Specific to sheds and accessory structures in the setbacks. First of all, was the person online, but she told me she couldn't hear. So, Ms. Rosales, can you hear us now? I haven't heard that from her. I'm not sure she can hear us.
She's muted, though.
Is that?
Can you remind her how
to... Yeah, if you're... Is this Ms. Gonzalez? Is that what...
Rosales.
Rosales, okay. If this is you, you can unmute yourself and also hit star 6 for the unmute so you can talk. Yes, now we can hear you. There's probably going to be a little bit of a delay, but we can hear you. So you might want to keep yourself unmuted while we're going through this conversation.
Okay. So it was noted on Drive-By that Ms. Rosales was building a structure in her backyard. So I emailed her to find out what that was. It was unpermitted. I met with her, and it is a 12-by-8 shed in the rear yard. It's set 5 feet off the back property line and 5 feet off the side property line. So I told her the setbacks in the rear are 10 feet. Structure does not meet setback requirements to the rear property line. So she submitted this application for text amendment. She did think that the setbacks were 5 and 5. She has a pretty small backyard, not a lot of room to place the shed. And this is actually a pretty common issue that we have in the building department with permitting the sheds and also just unpermitted sheds going up very commonly in the setbacks in the rear. That 10-foot setback is pretty hard to meet in a lot of the yards. So she submitted this. She did stop work on her shed, but her shed is 12 feet by 8 feet. The 8 feet portion is along the back property line, and it is 5 feet. So it's 5 feet into the rear setback.
Okay, is there any way we can bring up a map? We've done that before, and it's really useful to see.
You want to see the overhead?
Yeah, see the...
Well, I mean, you're not going to see the shed in it.
No, but because you mentioned the size of the yard and stuff like that, so it's a lot easier to see the visuals.
I'm trying to do it on my computer. I don't think that's fair. Oh, yeah. Google Maps. She's in 108 Myrtle. It's in the RA2 district. It is an older neighborhood, so it had a lot of non-conforming structures in it. So if you look at the overhead map, you're going to see, in fact, right behind her, there's a shed. There's a few sheds sitting right on the property line.
The application says Carolina Beach, but it's definitely Carrie Beach.
It's definitely Carrie Beach.
It's only popping up Carolina Beach on Google Maps, too. Is that right? Is that it, Bethany?
108 Myrtle?
That's it.
Yeah. All right.
I think that's just old. It used to be.
Mm-hmm. It used to be part of
But once again, while you're looking for this, keep in mind that we're looking at this specific location we're calling up, but this change will apply to everyone.
That's correct, yes. in fact...
That's it right there, right where the red car is.
Yeah, it's kind of hard.
I don't think I'm going to be able to see the box.
So, I mean, I don't know if we can hook my computer up.
You
want to talk?
Yeah, you
just
got it.
Because
I have it up
online.
Oh, you have this.
Yeah,
I think
so
that's what they
want to
see.
One other comment to follow up on that last comment. Have you got the proposed changes to...
Can I just show it to them?
Yes.
So, all right.
Yes.
Yes.
Can we have it?
Yeah, we have all the proposed changes.
On your application, you've got the one that has flat.
Change it to 5 feet.
Yeah. Well, I think the intent is residential, but if you go down to the bottom.
So she doesn't have the permit manager system on her computer. So.
Okay.
But this is our GIS map. This shows. So this is.
Which one is it?
So this is her property right here.
Oh, red car still there.
Yep. So as you can see, the shed in the rear property
is where,
behind her is non-conforming. The shed.
Which shed is it? Is it that the white one or the?
The white one is not hers. That's
I didn't think so. So where would the shed
so
be?
So her in this picture is old, so it does not have the shed in it.
Oh, okay.
There is an old shed there, right in back of her property. She built it. The new shed in back of that shed. She's going to actually demolish the old shed because it's...
So it's where there's a space behind the shed.
Yes, it's right behind it. And there, like I said, it still has a 5 foot distance behind it and a 5 foot on the side. Which the side setback is 5 feet. So it meets setbacks on the side. It just doesn't meet the 10 foot setback.
Okay.
Is the existing shed conforming?
The existing shed is conforming, yes, but it is dilapidated.
So if she took it down first and put the new shed
she
there, that would work.
She's going to take it down, Ashton is still up behind the other one. Yeah. I think Ms. Rosales would like to say something, too.
Yes, Ms. Rosales, if you wanted to speak. Yes, we were just trying to get a sense as to where it was. So we were looking at the Google Maps, both from the top as well as from the front, to get a sense about where it's positioned in your backyard. And that's really all we were doing. So
right, and this is a text amendment, so it's really not specific. She's the one that applied for it. Her situation, but if this is actually, this will be for the entire town. This would be, the text amendment proposed would be to allow sheds or accessory structures in that 5 foot setback in the rear. So her situation really doesn't matter. It's going to apply to everybody.
A point about that, the intent seems to be to allow these things on residential lots. But the very last proposed amendment would make it applicable to every zoning district, commercial or otherwise. So if you want to move forward, just consider whether you want to tweak that last one to limit it to residential, just like the top one.
I have to ask a question of Ms. Rosales. Why didn't you knock down the old shed and just simply build the shed, the new shed, where the old shed is? Because then it would have been conforming.
Well, the old shed was like right on top of the house, like pretty much backed up to the back of my house. And I didn't feel it was safe to have a shed there. I mean, just right on top of the house to me seems like a fire concern or a safety concern, especially considering, you know, the things that you store in the shed. So I had stuff in that shed, and so what I did was I built the other one, you know, with the intention of moving stuff over and tearing the other one down, so I built it right next to it, thinking I had the space to do it, because I thought it was, like I said, 5 feet on the back and 5 feet on the side.
Okay.
Like I said before, this is actually a really, really common thing that comes up for us. 10 feet off of the rear in the small yards, a lot of times I go over and I meet with people and we try to locate a position for sometimes even just small prefab sheds that they want to put up. And going 10 feet off the property line puts it like right smack in the middle of their yard. So this is a common issue that we're always trying to find where we can put these accessory structures.
What's the disadvantage of having it 10 feet versus 5? Or the advantages are...
Well, They're listed, if you look at the memo from building inspections, I have what our ordinance reads is the purpose of setback. Mm-hmm. The 10-foot setback in the rear is, I mean, that's just, I'm not sure exactly why it's 10 feet. I'm guessing that's for more for like the principal building. But it's just, it's 5 on the side, it's 10 in the rear, and 20 in the front. That's just what the setbacks are. It's all permitted structures, so that would include, because we require permitting sheds, sheds fall into that category, just like the houses do.
Well, it's 10 feet for the main structure, but there's not...
All structures,
okay.
Yeah, except for what's in...
except some exceptions.
Except for exceptions like a handicap type things.
So there, I mean, we've added... if you look at 153610, that is everything that is the exception to the setbacks, which is we like fences. Fences can go on the property line.
Yeah, we have like walkways, propane tanks, generators, mm-hmm. things like that.
So if you said for a kind of a shed or something like that, if it was 5 on the side and 5 in the back, I mean, would that make it a bigger issue, or it would help the situation? I'm trying to understand, well, people are doing it, and they're doing it unpermitted.
It's our belief that it would help people place them. John?
We have small lots, and so people build a big house on it, and they don't have any room for a shed. And
right.
The next property owner comes along, buys the house, and decides they want a shed. Well, they don't have any room for their shed, so... Would it help the situation? Well, it helps the public get what they want on their property. Does it help our zoning and the, you know, the purpose for those setbacks? I mean, I believe that's the debate.
I think the other thing we need to consider is separation of other properties, right? If you look at the letter attached in here, too, from the fire chief, he's talking about the setback being a life safety and fire exposure issue for the neighboring properties and not in favor of the change. So.
That seemed to be the only objection from yes. staff, if I understand it right. It's just fire?
That's correct.
Well, it's the one that would really apply. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, because technically, if this would be approved, then you could have two neighbors both have sheds that would be only 10 feet away, you know, each one could be 5 feet from each other and back up 10 feet from each other.
If this was allowed, then there would still be, conforming structures would still be 10 feet apart.
And you could still have a fence in between those,
but
narrowing
I mean,
it down to 5 feet.
Non-conforming structures, we already have non-conforming structures, obviously, that are right next to each other right now, so.
Well, don't we also, I mean, we talked about this last time and had a rather good debate about non-conforming structures and that sort of thing. Is the original is conforming, okay, even though it's dilapidated, and but it is conforming, so this doesn't fall into fixing up a non-conforming structure. This is a separate structure, so we're not looking at that.
That's correct, yes.
Okay.
And I just say, as far as the fire perspective, if you're building a shed in your backyard, you can guarantee there's going to be gasoline in it.
Unless you have an electric lawnmower.
Just a technical question. But so,
I don't have gas.
A shed like this, that's required to be permitted?
That's correct, yes.
And even if it's like a pre-built to be put on the lot?
Correct, yes. And for this purpose, one of the main purposes we require permitting for this is because make sure that it meets setbacks. Because, like I said, a common thing, and we a lot of times we find these sheds after they've already gone up.
Let me kind of ask a question, because you can make sheds just to be, buy prefab sheds and just sit it back there. You can also wire them. You could make them living units, have your kids stay in them, and all that sort of thing, too. From your experience, you know, when you go out and look at these sheds, you can put a kitchen in them, too. To what extent? Are they really just kind of prefab? They're just sitting there? Or are they really kind of built almost like an extension of the house, even though they're not part of the house?
The ordinance is actually for accessory structures in general, so it could be a garage, I mean, it could be, yeah, they could have electrical.
So they could, you know, by doing this as an accessory building, by the definition of accessory building, we're also allowing garages, and any accessory building would then be allowed to have a 5 foot back.
Any incidental use structure, yes.
And garages would be considered part of that.
If you look at our, opinion or recommendation, however we word it, I definitely put some limitations on there if you were to entertain this ordinance change for sure.
You consider a 10 by, your recommendation is a 10 by 10. To me, that seems like a pretty big shed.
It might be.
I mean, my shed's probably 3 by 6.
Do we want to protect our setbacks that we've had since 1973? If not, then should we, you know, restrict what you can put within that setback? That's kind of where I'm.
Yeah, no, all right. So let's kind of open it up for discussion. Or questions, because we do have the applicant on.
I have a question.
Oh, yes.
Can you have multiple sheds?
You can have.
Yeah.
There's nothing that prohibits multiple sheds.
As long as it's within the setbacks.
That's correct.
Which one now would be 5 feet if we pass this.
So someone could put in a series.
But yes. You know, from what you said, there's considerable amount of unpermitted.
Yeah, it's one of those things that people aren't aware needs to be permitted and often are put up before we even see them.
And some of them may have been there for years.
Yeah, and we do have a lot of non-conforming sheds as well that are already sitting on the property line. But, you know, when those come down or when they need to be replaced, then we require them to meet the setbacks, just like any other non-conforming structure.
All right, so discussions. I think John kind of summarized exactly what it is. Do we want to maintain the 10-foot setback that we've had for a long time for accessory buildings? And if we're willing to flex on that, what do we want to have allowed up to the 5 feet? So there's really kind of two issues going on, I think. The first discussion would then determine whether we have to have the second discussion. You know, so if we feel that the 10-foot is kind of firm, then there's no reason to have the second discussion. So let's go in and maybe talk about the maintaining the 10-foot as a firm setback.
I was just thinking about if the setback is eliminated, how do neighbors feel about some type of structure right on their property line?
The proposal is not to eliminate the setback, it's to give it a 5 foot setback instead of a 10 foot setback.
Right.
Because there may or may not be a fence up.
I mean, I personally like the 10 foot setback because I want to have that space between my neighbor in the back. So, but I live where we're also controlled by CC&R, so it's, you know, it's not going to affect me.
Well, you have a 5 foot on the side and 10 foot in the back.
Right.
So one neighbor's going to be happy, one neighbor's not. So.
So.
It would be the same in the. It would affect you because it would be the same. I mean, the HOAs don't have anything more restrictive than this for sheds. If you're allowed to have a shed, it would have to be 10 feet off your property line.
Right. Right. But this wouldn't change that. It still.
It would change it because then you could put a shed 5 feet off your property line instead of 10 feet off your property line.
Interesting. We'll have to check that.
If you were to go in your backyard and measure 10 feet from the property line, you'd see it's actually a pretty big distance to go in. And a lot of people, the sheds are, they do end up taking up their entire backyard, or right, they'll be sitting right in the middle of the backyard. Depending on where they're struck, you know, how big their backyard is, of course.
I mean, not too long ago, we had a lengthy discussion on fences.
Yes.
For a corner lot, side fence, how high it could be.
Right.
And this, the way this is worded now, would allow a 15-foot tall accessory building to be 5 foot off of the property line on a corner lot. And we just voted that. I mean, we went through so much on the fence because of visibility issues and everything like that.
And
so,
and safety issues.
And safety issues, yes.
Do people want to talk about it more, or I mean, we need to get some sort of a resolution here? You know, I mean, is a general consensus that we want to consider it, or do we want to stick with the 10-foot the way it's currently written? And once we get a kind of a feel for that, then we can talk about, if we're willing to go to 5 feet, what restrictions on the building and that sort of thing.
My feeling is I'm not for it. I think we should stick with what we have, the ordinance we have, and hold people to that. And I understand people are going out there doing stuff they shouldn't be doing, but that's not right either. So I don't think we should change the rules
because people are
for that.
Okay. Well, I'm kind of torn between, okay, it's been like that for a long time, forever, but, you know, is there an advantage or disadvantage of moving it to 5 and allowing people to use that space in their yard? That's the part that I'm struggling with personally. I'm trying to understand, other than, you know, what the, you know, comments from the fire chief, is there any other reason why we shouldn't look at that, since they're, you know, I'm not really hearing a lot of things other than we just didn't want to do it.
Well, that was the only department head that
correct
had a problem with it.
But they're already there, so, you know, especially in some of the older lots. So I personally, for me, if it's something that's going to be advantageous to a person that has a property, and it's going to eliminate some issues for the building department and help them have more clarity of what you can do and what you can't do, that's the part that I'm trying to understand.
I mean, I don't know exactly, but I do know there are some houses that have utility poles in their backyards that run down strips also. So you wouldn't want to allow somebody to build a 15-foot shed. And I don't know what size easements the utility gets down here, but I know where I came from, it was always a 20-foot wide easement.
Mm-hmm.
So 10 on each property would give them their 20 feet. If we allow people to build these structures now within that 20, I don't know if that 20 applies here.
Utility easement, they would not be able to build any structure in unless they got permission from council to do so. So, I mean, they would not be permitted to build any structures in the utility easement.
John, you know, I know there's a lot of non-conforming structures out there, but aren't there also non-conforming sheds that go actually up to the property line too?
Oh, yes, sir.
Yeah. So the 5 feet, I mean, because they're doing it, I have a problem because they're doing it to say that let's go ahead and change it, because then let's go ahead and change it to no setback, which I don't agree with. So, you know, I think we gotta, I mean, to me, it is a safety issue, but there's also a bit of a, you know, an aesthetic issue and concern about the space that people want to have in their backyard, you know, and not have that sense of being closed up by a large building. Because all the other accessory type of things that are allowed in the setback are pretty small. You know, I mean, they're fences, obviously, ground level walkways, ground level aprons for pools, disability ramp. So this is a pretty significant thing when we're talking about, is to allow a building to go up to the 5 foot setback.
Or change the height.
I think you're right on all counts. I mean, all of you guys are. You know, we're going to still see these text amendments come, but you're going to still see these several times a year, because these are concerns that we have, or we receive from the general public every so often, probably bi-weekly. And, you know, at some point you got to look at, well, what does the general public want? You know, at least I believe that's the way zoning is supposed to work, you know.
You also have to consider how many people have already built their sheds per the rules. And now we're looking at changing that rule because Somebody doesn't like it?
Well, yeah, but, you know, if I'm looking at the rule, you know, looking at the change today, I'm not opposed to having the 5 and the 5, but reducing the height.
I think if I were you guys and you were going to consider making this change, I would definitely put some parameters on it. Not just an accessory building, you can go, you know, 5 and 5 on your rear and side setbacks.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, that part I understand, but the height seems to be a little bit excessive.
Maybe the best thing to do is kind of take a straw poll right here and see who is in favor of maybe considering the 5 feet but with some adjustments versus who just feels that it should stay at 10 feet. So my feeling is it should stay at 10 feet. I mean, that's my own personal opinion.
Mine also.
Yeah, I'm open to the possibility of bringing it down to 5, but with some pretty conservative restrictions, and even more conservative than a 10 by 10, and then, of course, a much lower roof pitch or roof height. But I do agree that not only do you have the opportunity for people to now be able to use their property in ways they want to, but you also risk having people that didn't have a neighboring shed all of a sudden now have that issue come up for them. So I think, again, if we do something, it's got to be very conservative, very restrictive, so that it doesn't impede on other neighbors' properties, you know, at least from a perception standpoint.
Okay. I mean, just from the straw poll, I think we've got 3 against it, you know, even with adjustments. So why don't you make a motion then?
Then I would make a motion, Mr. Chairman, that we how would I make it, that we do not accept this or we do not recommend it to council?
Yeah, it'd be a recommendation, a vote on a recommendation.
My motion is that we do not recommend this to council. That's my motion.
Okay. I'll go ahead and second that. Any further discussions? Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Opposed.
Okay, so it's 3-2. Okay. Next item then is to adopt the consistency statement for...
For this matter, if you look at the one that's labeled con on top, I'd ask you to read the last 3 paragraphs, which sets forth the findings. If you agree with those findings, you can go ahead and entertain a motion to adopt the proposed consistency statement.
What is it now? Package. I lost it.
Top should have CON in red.
I'm still looking at roof pitches.
Okay, page 35.
Okay, there we go. Okay, so...
Last 3 paragraphs tells you what you need to know.
So it'd be the first one, page 35.
I'll just read you the findings. The commission finds that limiting encroachment of structures within the setback areas mitigates against adverse environmental impacts by preserving open spaces, light, and air. Commission also finds that limiting structures within the setback areas furthers public health, safety, and welfare by, for example, not impeding the progress of first responders in exigent circumstances. Next paragraph. Based on these findings, the commission concludes that the proposed amendments to KBC 1536.010 and .070, if adopted, would be inconsistent with the provisions of Part 3, Section 2B of the Land Use Plan, which states in pertinent part that the town will, quote, ensure that any uses of the land minimize negative environmental impact and avoid risk to public health, safety, and welfare.
Okay, I'll go ahead and make a motion to adopt consistency statement regarding not consistent with the land use plan.
Second.
Okay, any further discussions? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Opposed.
Okay. Again, 3-2 on that. Again, for the applicant, you know, I hope the applicant, I mean, there is an opportunity to build something that is conforming there. Hopefully she can, you know, work specifically with trying to figure out how to get a shed there that would be conforming, because she does have enough space, particularly if she were to knock down that other, the other unit. But again, as pointed out, when we do a text amendment, that impacts the whole town of Curie Beach, not just one individual. So we have to consider that. But again, I certainly do appreciate the applicant.
Is there a possibility?
We are making a recommendation to council. This will be presented to council at their next council meeting. And the council has the final authority to terms of determining what happens to this. We're just making a recommendation to council.
And just so the applicant knows, council will fix a date for the public hearing. They'll fix that date during the November meeting. The public hearing will probably be in December. What's that?
It was scheduled October.
Oh, I'm sorry. I got to. Right, just I got to reduce all that by 1 month. They'll fix the public hearing date this month and hold it in November.
Yeah, I would recommend that you attend, if possible, the next council meeting, which is October 24th. And this will be discussed, and you know, as the chairperson, I'll be presenting the recommendation of the Planning and Zoning Commission, but the council certainly has the final say in this.
Right. By code and statute, this commission just reviews and recommends the council acts on the application.
Okay. Well, thank you for attending. All right. The last one is town ordinances regarding private beach access. And again, this one ended up there because I think John said it was going to be there.
I'm not quite sure. Recently, a property owner decided to rebuild their beach access way. They built it to the same exact height and size. It extended a little further because the dunes extended a little further than when they built their old one. A neighbor took exception to that, voiced their concern to me, wanted to see the permitting that I did for that, wanted to see the regulations governing such, and when he didn't quite get the answer that he wanted, asked what he could do about it, and so I pushed him towards town council. Town council discussed it at their last meeting and instructed us to put this on your agenda for review. So, what this is about is your beach access, standard beach access way from a residential house to the beach. Historically, they're elevated. They have a top rail and a center rail, and they go out to the beach strand and stairways down. Some property owners over the years have, depending on the topography of the property in front of them, how high their dunes are, they'll run their walkway down pretty low to the ground. That way they don't have to have handrails and run it all the way out. That's what this property owner wants to see. We don't have any ordinance that regulates that. Our ordinance basically piggybacks onto the camera regulations, which are your walkway can't be any larger than 6 feet wide, it can't be dug into the dune, and the posts can be no more than 5 feet in the ground. I get where the complaint has come from. I can see where he's coming from, and I agree with him. And over the years, I have encouraged people to build their access ways closer to the ground. And a lot have, depending on the topography, of course, again. So, you know, is there room for this to be an ordinance? I think there is. Does it need to be an ordinance? That's up to you guys, I guess.
So the complaint has to do with the height of the...
And restricting views, yes, sir.
And restricting views. So he built it way higher over the dunes, mm-hmm. and then he's dropping out further.
Yes.
In your history as a building inspector, have you seen dune changes that would impact the height of the walkway?
Yes, absolutely.
So if we were to vote on being able to lower it, would that be the possibility that at the next storm you'd have to tell six different people They had to rip up their walkway and raise it up.
That's hard to answer that question, but that is a very valid point that you bring up. And when you build something low to the ground like that, inevitably the dunes are going to grow. And according to the authority on dunes and beach grass and things like that, when you have something built low to the ground like that, and the dune builds up over it, you've essentially created an inlet there. So if we were to have some storm surge that came up, well, instead of having a dune that stretched across the beach, now you have a little inlet here, you have a little inlet here, you have a little inlet here caused by your walkway. That is something that if he was standing here right now, his name is Spencer Rogers, by the way, that's exactly what he would say. But the other point to that is that the dunes that these would be affecting are typically your frontal dunes, and they're considered, you know, expendable.
If it's low, does that tend to catch sand more than the raised walkways?
I think you would see sand build up under a low walkway much quicker than a high walkway, yes.
Do you have a recommendation for this? I mean, if we're talking about, and I personally think it would be good to have an ordinance on it, you know, but.
I think it's a cleaner look when they're lower without handrails, my personal opinion. And, you know, when the lay of the land lends itself to where that's nice and easy, that's, you know, it's nice and easy. But if it doesn't, and what I mean by that, we do have areas where we have a nice high dune and then it just gets flat. Well, you got to come off the house, stairway down, stairway up, stairway down, and then you can go flat. Well, that's not very fun. Let's just go straight off the walkway and then taper it down that way. It makes it a lot easier, more simple construction, and less costly. Whereas in other areas of town, it's just pretty much flat. There is not a significant dune system.
John, do we know if any of the neighboring towns have ordinances?
I haven't done any research on it. I've heard of other issues like this over the years, but I've never really followed up with it. That's right.
Are we giving you more trouble than not by setting a height? And then after every storm, depending on whether we lose sand or gain sand, you got to go around and tell people they're...
We'd only look at this if we're building a new one. If they're rebuilding one or building a new one, that's the only time we're looking at this.
And John, this walkway was built under camera guidelines and regulations.
And we can make them more restrictive. We cannot make them less restrictive.
Correct. But it meets their CAMA regulations.
Yes, sir, it does.
So if we do come up with an ordinance, it wouldn't affect this particular walkway.
It will not.
Okay, because but you might recommend that in future walkways that we do have an ordinance in place.
So just like with the houses and things, there would be a lot more non-conformances to the ordinance. Is that right? Existing now, I'm sure if we say...
I don't know that I'd really look at it as a nonconformity because it's an expendable asset to your house. You know, it's a walkway on the beach. You know, chances are it's probably going to get torn up sooner or later anyway. So would you really look at that as a nonconformity?
But if somebody wanted to make some modification to part of it, would they be able to do that if it was not in conformance to the current regs that we're talking about?
I don't think that's a great portion of this conversation that we should have if you guys think about putting in ordinances to address whether or not a complete rebuild would be something that could be done under the nonconformity portion of our ordinance. Yes.
I mean, what would be the, given the existing lack of an ordinance and you just have the camera rule, what... I always think of kind of the worst case scenario. What would be the worst case scenario that somebody could build if we don't have an ordinance in place?
You could have a walkway that, based off the dune elevation in the front yard, which we have some dunes on the north part of the beach that are in excess of 8 feet tall. So they could come off their second level deck and go straight down to the beach. which we already have some of that. Live on the ocean front, I mean, you know, you already got a great view. I guess people get frustrated with railings too, but. That's the worst case scenario.
Well, that, you know, again, maybe another straw poll. Do you think we should talk about having an ordinance about this?
I'm sorry, John, one other question.
Yeah, go ahead.
So is there a railing height?
So yes, if your walkway is over 30 inches above the ground, you have to have a railing.
But that railing can be as high as you want it to be?
It has to be a minimum of 36 inches tall.
Just a minimum, no max?
No, sir.
And is that an issue here, or is it just 36 inches for this one that's being challenged?
It's not an issue with this one. Well, I guess I don't understand your question.
Is the railing height just 36 inches, or are the railings even taller than that?
It's 36 inches.
Okay.
I'll recommend you guys go out there and check out a couple of locations and look at them, and then maybe table this till next month. So go over. This is not an ordinance that you'll see a difference on real quick. It's going to be about a 10 or 15 year lag time before you actually see a bunch of low walkways, you know what I mean?
It'd also be good, I think somebody mentioned, to see what other, you know, maybe Riceville Beach has already got an ordinance, you know, to address these type of issues too that we could look at.
Yeah, if I make a comment, a couple of things. One is, as John said, I mean, the dunes are constantly changing. And so something that might be 30 inches high today could be 45 inches or 50 inches high tomorrow if something gets washed away. Similarly, if you have a flat walkway, it can get buried. So I think that it's important for you guys to go out and look at the walkways that are there and see what this one is, looks like, which precipitated the complaint and the request, versus the ones that have been there for years. And as John mentioned, North End versus the South End is completely different in terms of what you can build and how stable it's going to be and how long it's going to be there. I mean, the ones at the South End get rebuilt probably on an average every 2 years.
Well, the ends do.
Yeah, the ends, right? Yeah. But this new walkway is really the objection for the most part, I think, John, is extending out over the primary dune.
It went out further than it used to, and that's because of the dune growth.
Right. Yeah. And that's it. I mean, so you got to remember, this is a dynamic environment. It's changing all the time. So
yeah, I think all of us.
Put in restrictions, it's going to be a little complicated.
Yeah, I think all of us have looked at many walkways, living in Kiri Beach, walking around the beach. I haven't seen this particular walkway, but I'm pretty familiar with walkways in Kiri Beach and, you know, dunes rising and lowering and everything like that. Where is this walkway again?
Your
Kiri Beach Village walkway, that would be a great indication of what the worst case scenario would be.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big walkway that goes out. There's no doubt about it.
On top of the dune and it kind of goes straight down. Well, you know, you're about to live right beside it.
Right.
But the address for the new walkway is 625 Fort Fisher Boulevard South.
Okay.
And then I would encourage you to go down to, say, Davis Beach Road access and walk out there and look at the adjoining cross beach accesses in that area. A lot of those in that area are all ground level and further south. When I say ground level, they're about that high.
Mm-hmm. All right, so I guess we'll make a motion to just table this and think about this and maybe, you know, us go out and look at it and, you know, see if we want to have a regulation.
We'll keep it on the agenda for next time.
Yeah. So we'll keep it on the agenda for next time. Okay. I believe that is it. Any questions or comments? You know, our next meeting is, what is it, November. Do we have a date?
November the 2nd,
okay. Do we have anything coming up for HPC or nothing yet? Okay, all right.
Nothing
yet, okay. All right. Any commissioners' comments, questions, anything you want to have on the next agenda to talk about that we can put on the... Nope.
I think we got a lot on there already.
All right. Is there a motion to adjourn?
Make a motion to adjourn.
Second.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Great.